This is our seventh Sunday. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. We're not going to do that. Question? Comment? Oh, you need one. Okay. All right, so in this passage, Mark chapter 10, Jesus and the disciples are on the road just after the event with the rich man that had happened that we looked at last week. And you'll see that in this passage, just as in last week's, that Jesus is explaining to the disciples how the kingdom works. They're on the way to Jerusalem where he's going to do his mighty work of salvation. And this is Jesus' last chance during his earthly ministry before his resurrection and ascension to impart kingdom truth and kingdom principles to the disciples. And that's what he's in the business of doing. And you could tell that the enemy was really working against Jesus here. Because there's all these times where these people come up to him trying to distract him with things that had nothing to do with the kingdom. Things like, let's be great, let's have a lot of power, let make me influential based on my good standing and based on my good works. And he had to resist all of that. Last week we saw how being rich did not mean that you were blessed or righteous, but that it was only by your faith, your activity in the kingdom, that righteousness was counted as theirs. So let's take a look today at what Jesus has to say about greatness. Starting at verse 35. Mark chapter 10, verse 35. And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him. And they said to him, Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. You know, that's a really, really bad idea. Like, sometimes Will, my son's 5, right? So whenever he wants to watch TV, but he knows I'm going to say no to go read a book or to go do a puzzle or create something, he'll say, Dada? I'll say, yes. He'll say, can you just say yes? To what? To which I'll always say, no, I will not say yes until I know what the question is. And he's not quite old enough to understand that. But someday he's going to get really, really frustrated by me just saying no before I even heard the question. He's going to be, but you haven't even heard what I want yet. And I'm like, that's the point. And so the disciples here are doing the same thing. Jesus, we're about to ask you something, but we want you to say yes. We want you to say that you're going to give it to us before we even ask you. But Jesus, thank goodness, is a good father, and he wasn't a sucker. You know, he didn't fall for it. Verse 36, he said to them, what do you want me to do for you? Verse 37, and they said to him, grant us to sit at your right hand and one at your left hand in your glory. In other words, just like the rich man last week who wanted to get in on the expansion of the kingdom at the ground floor, he wanted to be in charge. These people want to be in charge even more than the 12 disciples, the other 10. Isn't that such a weak way to try and get authority? Like, we're going to separate ourselves from these guys and whisper to you in the shadows over here, hey, can you, but I know it hasn't happened yet, but pick us, you know, trying to get in before it actually happens. We're the ones. And you know, the book of Matthew tells it a little differently because Matthew had a different perspective. Remember that Mark wasn't there and Peter gave his stories to Mark, and that's where Mark's inspiration came from. And Matthew tells it a little differently. Mark's nicer to people. Matthew's a little harsher. And the way that Matthew tells it is that the sons didn't even ask. They went and got their mother. And their mother came up to Jesus and said, you need to make my sons, one to sit at your right and one to sit at your left. These guys are pathetic. I mean, they're so weak. Would you respect someone? You know, I mean, we have this happening today. You know how many stories I've heard of college professors giving a bad grade and the parents of their students call? Why did you give my son a bad grade? Why did you give my daughter a bad grade? I want to know why. And the college professors are like, you know you're creating your own problem here. This kid's going to be in your basement when he's 45 playing video games because you won't let him be a person. You won't let him fight his own battles. You're making them weak. Making them weak. I was talking to an employer one time, and he told me that after a particularly bad interview, the young woman said to him, give me 6 months and I'll be running this company, and I'm going to be your boss. He had been there 25 years. When she didn't get the job, shockingly, the girl's mom called the man to get an explanation as to why she didn't get the job, because she's so qualified and she's such a special person. Can we just agree right now that if your parents have to do everything for you and stand up for you and you can't stand up for yourself, that something has just gone extremely wrong if you're an adult? I mean, kids, yeah. But if you're an adult, come on. Something's wrong here. And that's kind of what happened here. James and John were in their early 20s at this time. They were young, but they weren't that young. And they had their mom come and fight their battles for them. It's just weak. James and John were basically saying, we want to be the most powerful, the most respected, the most influential people in your kingdom. And my mom agrees. My mom told us that it should be us. We're the most important. And sometimes, you know, I wonder if Jesus just didn't have this giant red spot on his forehead from being around his disciples. Like, mom says we should be the most powerful. Wham! You know? Come on, guys, you know? And did you notice part of Jesus' response there? Some people that I've been reading about this week are amazed at Jesus' restraint of not chiding them for this ambition. Notice that Jesus did not go on a tirade about how ambition is wrong. That's not what Jesus did. He didn't go on and berate them about how they thought too much of themselves, how they wanted to be great, and how evil it is to think that you are destined for greatness. He didn't do that. His teaching here was not that wanting greatness is bad. It's very important. This brings us to the first kingdom principle. In the kingdom, it is a good thing to seek greatness, to strive to do great things for God, to be ambitious, and to imagine the great things that God can do through you. Because God did not create you for a small life. He did not create you for an insignificant life. He did not call you to live in your little corner of the world, away from other people, and to live in smallness. But He has called us all to greatness. Who is it that tells us that our lives are small and that they mean nothing? Who is that? That's the devil. That's not God. God has called and designed us for great and mighty things. At our baptism, our new birth, we're given a new inheritance, and that inheritance is for greatness. Listen to Jeremiah 29. It says, "For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope." How about Psalm 18? This is on your handout. It's kind of long, so I wanted to spend some time there. "This God, His way is perfect. The word of the Lord proves true. He is a shield for all those who take refuge in Him. The word of the Lord proves true." Verse 31, "For who is God but the Lord? And who is a rock except our God? The God who equipped me with strength and made my way blameless. He has made my feet like the feet of a deer and set me secure on the heights. He trains my hands for war so that my arms can bend a bow of bronze. You have given me the shield of your salvation and your right hand supported me, and your gentleness made me great." Does that sound like this guy is insecure to you? Does he sound fearful? Does he sound like, oh, woe is me, I'm just nothing compared to, you know? That's not him. David knew that God had destined him for greatness, and he wasn't afraid to claim that. Listen to the words he used. "Equipped with strength, blameless, feet like the feet of a deer, secure, hands trained for war, arms that can bend bows of bronze, made great." Brothers and sisters, accept that your inheritance is to be great. This church is destined to be great. And I know that sounds funny when there's only 20 or 30 or 40 of us in the building and we can go down the road and there's hundreds and thousands. But I mean it. This church is great and is destined for even greater things. I'm going to explain that a little bit more, but for right now, just remember kingdom principle number one. In the kingdom, you are created for greatness. All right. That's one. There's two more. You guys with me? All right, verse 38. Back to Mark, chapter 10, verse 38. Jesus said to them, "You don't even know what you're asking. You have no idea what you're talking about. You know, are you able to drink the cup that I drink? Or to be baptized with the baptism which I am baptized?" Hint, hint. Everything I've just been talking about. Remember how I told you guys over and over and over and over again that I'm about to die? Hint, hint. Yeah, we're able. We are able. We're your guys, you know. We're ready. It makes you wonder if they didn't really believe him. They're like, that's just the crazy Jesus. We believe the Messiah Jesus who's going to restore Israel. Not a single clue what they were talking about. They must have thought that maybe this is like the new appointing ritual for the new rulers under Jesus' reign, that maybe the ceremony will have a cup drinking ceremony and a baptism ceremony. We're able. Sign us up. We'll show you. We'll prove you right. We'll make you proud. Sign us up. And they had no idea what they were talking about. It reminds me of how I was just coming out of college. I know none of you, this is just me. But if they, it's really painful to talk about. I don't even want to tell it. But for your benefit, I'm going to. In the first 3 months of my first career type of job, I did all kinds of presentations. I coached people. I told 30-year vets my opinions based on the latest research that I was up on. I knew everything. And I did have a good amount of knowledge, but I had absolutely no wisdom. And I had even less true understanding. This is the desire and the dream of so many of our young people today. And a few who lived confused lives as they get older. That the desire for greatness that is misguided leads to rash decisions, to emotional overreactions, and to wrong thinking. And this was the mindset of James and John, who took this advice. You've got to make something happen for yourself. If you want something, go after it and go get it. That's their ambition. We're going to make it happen. And Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those whom it has been prepared." You notice Jesus honors their desire to share in his burden. Through his death and resurrection, he brought the world a chance for a new life. And this was the life and death of Jesus, bringing the world a chance through his sacrifice, dying for the sake of us. Later in James and John's lives, they would endure the burden, the opposition, and the hatred of their own people. And they would die a martyr's death. James and John were part of Jesus' inner three along with Peter. They saw every intimate detail. They shared in the largest portion of Jesus' burden after his death. James and John would go on to preach the gospel in Spain and throughout the Roman Empire and would later be martyred for their faiths. One being beheaded, one, they couldn't actually kill John. They tried multiple different ways, multiple different times. They boiled him in oil and he came out like shining. You can't kill me, because he had to write the book of Revelation. Anyway, that's a different story. Jesus couldn't give them what they asked because in Jesus' kingdom, there were already two people who had been handpicked. They'd already gone through the interview process. They'd already been accepted for these positions. I'm sorry, I can't give you those positions. They're already taken. Those positions of being the most revered, the most honored, the greatest in the kingdom had already been filled. And the iconography of the church, when it depicts the heavenly kingdom and Jesus in the center, I want you to look and see who's at the left and who's at the right. Do you have that picture? I was in there. Okay. I'll describe it for you. Jesus is in the center, and on this side is a woman with a veil over her head, kind of like that. Who do you think that is? That's Mary. That's his mother. And on the other side is a guy that's wearing the skins of beasts, and he's got honey in his hands, and he's preaching the word. Who's that? John the Baptist. These are the people that God had destined to occupy the positions of the most honor and to be the greatest in the kingdom. And do you notice that they didn't go to God and have their mothers ask them? Yeah, they didn't do that. Because the greatness in the kingdom is not about titles and power or the ability to tell us what to do. This is the second kingdom principle. Greatness in the kingdom is about being willing to do anything that God would ask you to do. Mary put her status in society, her entire future, her very life on the line to bear Jesus as the life giver to the life giver. Do you realize she could have been stoned for accepting this? She put everything that she had on the line to obey what God had for her. John the Baptist gave up every aspect of his normal life to live in the wilderness so that when the time came, he would prepare the way for the Lord. The two greatest in the kingdom occupying the left and the right positions, these positions of greatness and reverence, were the two that when God asked them to take up their holy missions and their holy commissions, they did it despite their hesitations. So remember that this principle is being willing to do anything for God. Lord, I just want to pray right now for your people in this room, that we would be a people that are willing to do anything for you. That when we hear you call out, that we would have the courage to follow your ways. And that your desire for our lives would be our desires. Let it be so. The third and final principle is where Jesus finally gets to the point of defining what kingdom greatness is. It turns into this big tiff. There it is. There's Mary and John. All right. Moving on. So this third section of our gospel today is there's a tiff between the disciples. You can imagine the other 10 didn't really appreciate James and John go, hey, I think we're greater than these guys. Are you going to announce that when we get to the kingdom? They didn't appreciate that, especially Peter. I mean, he was one of the inner three, you know? Like, guys, you couldn't even include me? I'm one of the inner three. And so they're all angry at James and John for their audacity in this power grab. But Jesus rectifies the situation by showing the disciples the true criteria for being great. Remember that you can't judge the greatness of a basketball player using the criteria of the president. You have to have the right criteria. So here is the criteria for greatness. Listen. Verse 41. And when the 10 heard it, they began to be indignant at James and John. And Jesus called them to himself and said to them, "You know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them. And their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant. And whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came to serve, not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." First, Jesus compares them to worldly leaders. If he were here today, he might have said something like, "You guys are trying to act like CEOs and presidents of companies. You're all about trying to get power and authority and influence, thinking that that makes you great and important in the eyes of God and of his people. Stop thinking like the world thinks." We still see this today, where in the church we're told, live your life in a way that makes you happy. Because if you're happy, then God will be happy. I've heard that preached from a pulpit. Be rich, follow your emotions, be influential and powerful. These are the concepts that are being taught in places calling themselves churches today. And this is a foreign concept to the church's ancient pattern of thought. It has no place. So be careful who you listen to. Going back to the passage, there are two very important words that I want to highlight to you right now. Look at the part, verse 43, he says, "Whoever would be great must be your servant." The word servant here is diakonos in the Greek, which means a willing person who follows directions and does good things for others because they see it as being their job. They see it as being their duty to do what God tells them to. That's how they see it. That's being a servant. And that is great. That is greatness. But I love what Jesus does next, because he uses this play on words to change the conversation from like a general sort of greatness to being the greatest, to being the first among the greats, to being the Michael Jordan and the Wayne Gretzky and the Jim Kelly. There are a whole bunch of great basketball players, but there's only one Michael. And the apostles James and John were trying to be the firsts in the kingdom. And so Jesus redirects their actions, but he does not remove the desire. He reshapes their minds so that they begin to understand that to be greatest in the kingdom, the word that Jesus uses is not diakonos. It's not servant. It's doulos, which means slave. It literally means someone who's taken it upon themselves to meet the needs of others, even if it's not in their own best interest. A servant in those times was a person who would put themselves in the service of others to get paid. It was a job. At the end of the day, they'd get money, or they'd be able to live with the person, get food and rest, but they could decide at any time to stop doing that. But a slave was different. To be a slave in the kingdom is to willingly put yourself in the service of others, but it hurts. And you're willing to bear that pain for the benefit of other people. To put yourself in their service, even though it's not in your best interest. Maybe even to put yourself in a bad situation, to make a decision that doesn't make sense. You look at your budget and you say, it doesn't make sense. But you decide to do it anyway. That's being a slave, to be the greatest in the kingdom. That's why our deacons and priests and bishops wear this thing. To show the world visibly the commitment that we've made. This is a yoke that slaves wear. It doesn't mean to be in positions of power and influence, but to carry the burden of service for those in the community of the church. But this is not just for the clergy, it's for every baptized member. Why do you think any person would take time on a Saturday afternoon to go help make sandwiches for the poor? How does that fit into their plan of life? How does that benefit them? Why would any person give from the blessings that God has given to them to support the work of the kingdom? You're looking at the budget. That doesn't make sense. It's not in your best interest. Pastor Bill Johnson emphasizes giving so that you feel it. So that you feel it. You feel the pinch. Why? Because that's what it means to approach greatness in the kingdom. And why do we do this as baptized Christians? Why do we do that? Why would any person make that decision? Because Jesus, the most deserving, the most holy, the most righteous, the one who would have no benefit, still came down to have not to have servants, but to make himself a slave. As a ransom for many. That word ransom literally meant the price that would be paid to the slave market, to buy the rights of a slave. And Jesus saw us in the slave market. He paid our ransom. But instead of shoving it in our face, he set us free. Free to follow him. Free to make the decision of whether to serve or to be a slave. Free to pursue greatness, which is our birthright as children of God. And here at St. Patrick's, we are called to serve even more than we have already. God has been revealing to us, to me, and to the leadership here, that we're called to move forward and to move deeper into the greatness of the kingdom, which is service to all, which is service to our community. Not just to be passing servants that move from place to place to place, doing little bits of goodness here and there, but to plant our flag in the ground, to dedicate this space to the service at which we have been called. This is our destiny. St. Patrick's Church is called and destined for greatness in this community. And it's not going to be by being the authority, by saying, look at us, we're so right, we should be able to tell you what is right and what is wrong, and what you should do and what you shouldn't do. That's not greatness. We're called for the greatness that is defined by our service to others. Even if it hurts, even if it's not to our benefit, this is our destiny. This is what God has called us to and what we are committed to. That one day we may come before Him and He may look upon us and He may say, well done, good and faithful servant. And everybody's service is going to look a little bit different. The way that you serve other people is going to look different depending on what your giftings are. Maybe you're going to be the sort of workplace service that is there to encourage, to magnify, to uplift the people that you work with. Maybe your destiny is to serve your children and to serve the children of this church, lifting them and instilling in them a belief that will last with them throughout all time. Maybe you're destined to become a part of the worship and of the service in the church. I ask you now to pray, to ask God, what is my service? What is my destiny? I'm not called to have a small life. I'm not called to have a small spiritual life, to have a small part in your church. I'm called for greatness. So God, reveal to me now, how would you have me to serve? And pray for me, that I might know. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Oh, I forgot something before I finish. I want to change something that's in our minds. Because for a long, long time we've been told, God helps those who help themselves. But I want to tell you, Jesus' word for you today is not God who helps those who help themselves. God helps those who help others. Take that and be free. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.
Pray for those.